Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Be sure to follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit that subscribe button. I'm Nick Fay. With me as always, Harris Richard. How you doing, Harris?
What's up, man? Episode number 70, not the only 70 that's going to be on your timeline, being that what happened last night in Boston.
Yeah, you mentioned it. This is number 70 for the episode, and Devin Booker dropped 70 last night on 21 of 40 and 4 of 11 from 3. He joined a list of six players to ever do it, so it's pretty impressive stuff for a guy that's only 20 years old.
Yeah, I'm a little aggravated on the – I know it was going to get a lot of press, but the team did lose the game, and I know that it hurts it a little bit, and – it's one of those situations for me where it just – I know that the picture after the game, and I know they're all celebrating it, and, you know, Crowder and Marky Chris going at it. You know, it just bothers me a little bit that it was celebrated as much as it was in the losing effort. I have a little bit of a problem with it. I mean, it's a great accomplishment. You know, the team is – you know, headed in for another lottery. I know it's a very young team, but it ticked me off a little bit.
I mean, I'm going to disagree with you. I think it's fine. You know, the Suns going into the game, they want to lose games. They started the youngest starting lineup in the NBA the other night. So I'm okay with it. If it was like 50 maybe, you know, like it's not that big a deal because we've seen plenty of players score 50 points. But yeah, Scoring 70 is just kind of ridiculous. And the shots that he hit, he had a ton of and ones in that game too. And the surprising thing is, like, I've heard a lot of people mention this too, is Devin Booker, you see he scored 70, you'd probably be like, oh, he probably hit 10 threes, but he only hit 4 threes. I think 24 free throws, and he hit 21 field goals. So, I mean, I think it's just impressive. And it's kind of harder, I think, to do it on such a bad team, because if you look at it, like, no one else on that team is like, oh, he's definitely going to kill us. I'm surprised Boston didn't, like, go harder to try to stop him after he got 50.
I think Avery Bradley was out, wasn't he?
Yeah, Avery Bradley was out. Marcus Smart was on him. Jay Crowder was on him. So, I mean, they're not bad defenders either. So, I know Marcus Smart looked like he was getting pretty pissed. Jay Crowder commented on his Instagram pic, and he was like, never seen so many guys happy after a loss. Mm-hmm. But Devin Booker responded, was like, you can't guard me.
Yeah, it's just something about it. It's like I said, I'm not taking anything away from him personally, but it's just I don't know. It just – they obviously force-feeding him at the end. I think he had 58. There was like a minute 39 left. And then he's, you know, going to the line. And like you mentioned, the 24 free throws. But it's different. I mean, he tweeted something out too that said, you know, hashtag 70.
Be legendary.
Yeah. I don't know.
He's a big Kobe Bryant fan too. I mean, I know I saw like an interview with him. Obviously, he's a type of player that wants to win games too. But in the Suns situation, I don't think it's as big a deal. Say if this was a team fighting for the AC like Portland and Dame scored 70 and they lost. Like, I think it'd be like harder. It'd be like worse that they lost. But since the Suns like game doesn't really matter either way, if they won or lost, if anything, if they won, it probably would hurt them more because they'd fall in the, you know, they'd have a less chance of getting a number one pick. So I'm okay with it. What do you think about Devin Booker? Obviously mentioned he's only 20 years old. He's obviously turning into a lethal scorer. Where do you think his career can go? What's the plateau for him in NBA comparison?
He's elite. He's definitely going to be, I mean, obviously an elite company scoring wise, but he's going to be fantastic. He's headed in the right direction. I think he plateaus as not a perennial MVP candidate, but definitely an all-star. And that won't be before too long. He's, like you said, he's only 20 years old. It's only his second season. The ceiling is the roof, as Michael Jordan would say, on Devin Booker. But no, with all jokes aside, kid's got a lot of potential, and it looks like he's going to fulfill it. Just a good demeanor about him. And he scores the ball a little bit like T-Mac. He reminds me of like a little bit of a T-Mac, Reggie Miller type, or like a little bit of a better handle.
I think that's an underrated part of his game, which I saw in the highlights last night, is his handle. You know, obviously, I think a lot of people compared him to Klay Thompson in the past, but I think he can create for himself a little bit more. Obviously, Klay's a better defender, and I think that's an area Booker can work on. like, the thing is, he's only 20, so he has so long to work on his game. Just hypothetically saying, you know, he fully develops as a scorer in the next few years, he can still become a great defender. And then from there, you know, when you're a great scorer, you look to be a great playmaker as well. The only really, like, true weakness, I guess I would say, is he's not, like, a super explosive athlete.
Yeah.
You know, but he's able to make up for it. Like, you know, you see him drive a lot, pump fake, draw those easy fouls. So he does have a high basketball IQ, too. And he has pretty good size.
Yeah, 6'5", 6'6". Could pretty much score.
And he could get bigger because he's only 20 years old. Like, he could easily, you know, put on a little bit more size and maybe grow an inch or two.
Yeah. So they lost last night, so I'm salty about it. I'm not as mad as some people. I know there are some people that are, like, really mad about it.
Some Celtics fans are really tight about it. Yeah, like,
Nick, at the end of the day, 70 is 70, and he was awesome offensively, but it does, for me personally, take a little bit away from it. And you said about the bad team, but they were also, you know, he's getting the looks. I mean, for a guy to play off caliber team on a good team to go out and do that, I think would be, you know, they were tailoring towards the Ilias, and they wanted it. The bench wanted it for him, and they just told him to go for it. I know the Celtics, it looked like there was something going on after the game. I saw some bickering after the game.
There probably was. I didn't really see much of that.
Coaching staffs. I don't think someone on the Celtics bench didn't appreciate it. And they were.
Oh,
they
and Earl Watson said after in his press conference, like, if you don't like it, do something about it.
Yeah.
About them. So, I mean, yeah.
Celtics.
I mean, people are going to be sour. Like, the Celtics really shouldn't be that mad. The game was pretty much a blowout. The Celtics were in control from the tip. I think they started the game in the first quarter. They had, like, an early 20-point lead. So, like, Booker was pretty much fighting an uphill battle. But talking about, you know, you talked about Chris and some of the other young players. Talking about young cores in the NBA, what we're going to do next is we're going to rank the top young cores. This is actually Jonathan Ibrahim's idea. He couldn't make it because of a scheduling conflict, but shout out to him for this. So, we obviously have the Bucks with Giannis Antetokounmpo, Thon Maker, Jabari Parker, Rashad Vaughn, Malcolm Brogdon. Then we have the T-Wolves with Karl-Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, Tyus Jones, Chris Dunn. Then the Sixers with Joel Embiid, Jahlil Okafor, Ben Simmons, Dario Saric, Timothy Luwan-Cabret. I'm not great at pronouncing his name. Raquan Holmes, TJ McConnell. Then we have the Nuggets with Jokic, Murray, Malik Beasley, Emmanuel Mudiay, Gary Harris Jr., and Juan Herman Gomez. Then we also have the Lakers, who have Zubac, Clarkson, Russell, Randall, Ingram, Larry Nance Jr., and then the team we just talked about, the Suns, who have Devin Booker, Chris, Bender, Ulis, Jones Jr., Alan Williams, TJ Warren, and Alex Len. So we got the Bucks, T-Wolves, Sixers, Lakers, Nuggets, and Suns. Out of those young cores, who do you think is the best? Like, let me make this a little bit easier. Which one is going to have the most success? You know, which one is going to win championships out of these young cores?
I like the direction the T-Wolves are in. My answer is guided in this direction is because mostly I think out of this group they have the best player in Karl-Anthony Towns. And Wiggins is no slouch either. And obviously you're going to get LaVine back and Tyus Jones is all right, but I think the combination of Wiggins and Towns and being led by Tom Thibodeau is going to propel them amongst this group. Some of those teams aren't really ready. I think out of that group, the Bucks are going to make the playoffs. So,
well, I'm saying long term though, not as in like what's ready, but what team, like, when it's all said and done, out of these young cores is going to have the most success. You know, some might be ready in 2 years, some might be ready in 4 years, some might be ready next year.
Yeah. I would say I like the T-Wolves the most, and I would put the Bucks right there also. The Suns are in the conversation as far as maybe three, four years it's going to take them. But when I think about this, it's the T-Wolves and the Bucks that come up most for me.
Yeah, no, I think it's the T-Wolves for sure as number one, because you look at Wiggins and Towns and no other team really has that combo. You know, both these guys are rookie of the year candidates. As you mentioned, Towns is likely to be the best player on this list, and probably Wiggins will be a top five player on this list as well. So, you know, two of the top five guys in that team. You probably could have made a better argument for the Bucks before the Jabari Parker injury. Giannis. We know he has his capabilities. Thon Maker also is a nice piece going forward. Very young, you know, can do a lot, can hit the three ball, long, lanky, athletic. Parker was doing some things. Rashad Vaughn hasn't really shown much in the NBA, but Malcolm Brogdon's been good, but he's at 24 already. And the Sixers have a lot of talent. The Suns have a lot of talent. Even the Nuggets, they all have a lot of talent. But, like, a lot of these guys, we don't know how great they'll be. The Sixers, I think, have a lot of potential. They also have a lot of question marks as well. Embiid, you know, we don't know if he's going to maintain his health throughout his career. Ben Simmons is yet to play in the NBA. Okafor really hasn't attracted a lot of thing. I mean, I guess you could say Dario Saric is probably, you know, the most of what you're getting with him right now, because he seems to be able to stay healthy and he's continued to improve.
The Sixers are going to be interesting. I think the jury is definitely still out just because they've had the injuries. Zarek has definitely been a nice surprise, and I think he'll end up winning Rookie of the Year this season.
Yeah, I think that's the most likely scenario.
Because of the injuries to Embiid. We haven't obviously seen Simmons play an NBA game. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Philadelphia going forward. They definitely have a high ceiling as well. But I factor in everything. I factor in coaching into this equation. And it's just projection, and
Sixers. One interesting thing about the Sixers is that this year, I think we've mentioned before on the show, they could have up to 3 first round picks, 3 of them being in the lottery as well. So that young core can really, really grow with this draft class we have right now.
Yeah. So you gave me 6 teams.
I gave you as well. We talked the Lakers, the Nuggets, and the Suns. The one interesting thing about the Suns is so many of these players are under 20 years old. You know, Devin Booker, Marquise Chris, Dragon Bender, Tyler Ulis, and Derek Jones Jr., all under 20 or 20 and under. So, like, they're super young. There's definitely a lot of potential going forward. Obviously, the Nuggets have Jokic, who a lot of people are, you know, going crazy over right now with his passing ability. His ability is high basketball IQ. And Jamal Murray has been great. He had that great in the Rising Star Challenge game. He had, you know, his moments. Disappointment. Beasley, we haven't seen a ton of. Gary Harris Jr. seems like he's developing into a solid young player. And Hermann Gomez, in the opportunities he's had, has definitely showed some flashes.
Yeah, I like him. And I think about this Nugget team, I think the Nuggets have, to me on this list, have at least passed the Lakers. I might put the Suns ahead of the Nuggets. And maybe – so I would have Suns, Nuggets – Sixers, Lakers, or I think those Sixers and Lakers are two bottom for me on this one, on this list.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say. Like, the Lakers definitely have some star potential there with Ingram, Russell, Randall, Clarkson, you know, and even probably Zubac, you know, has some potential to be a good player as well. So it's definitely hard to rank these cores. I think if we had to rank them going from the top to the bottom, I think we both agree number one will go with the T-Wolves and number two will go with the Bucks. And then from there on, that's where it starts to get difficult. At number three, it's tough because, like, the Sixers also just have, like, so many young players too, and it's like, you know, a few, like, two of these guys should probably turn out to be good players, and they have so many picks going forward. But we're talking about right now.
You probably put the Suns there.
Yeah, I think you have to consider the Suns.
The Nuggets.
The Nuggets too, though, because, like, I think Jokic has a really – I mean, you could probably argue he's probably the second best player on this list.
Yeah. The Nuggets, Suns, Sixers, Lakers.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Maybe the Lakers over the Sixers because the Sixers have more unknowns where the Lakers kind of have some idea. But like I mentioned, the Sixers are going to get all those picks this year and they can really continue to add to that squad. And there's young cores that we didn't even mention on this list that are really good too. So it's like, and then we mentioned this, a lot of people are saying this draft class is going to be great. The top 7 picks are, I guess, assumed to be almost locked to be all-stars. So more NBA. And talking about this list though, if you had to rank the top 5 players on this list, like out of these teams, the young core, which of these guys would you rank 1 through 5 as, like, when their careers are finished? I think we'll both agree Towns is number 1. Who would you put at number 2?
Tough. Probably Jokic.
I said Jokic, but, you know, I probably would put Giannis.
Yeah, Giannis, Jokic, Booker.
and then that fifth guy who,
yeah.
I mean, Embiid, it probably could easily be Embiid. Easily be Embiid if he's healthy. And like, Simmons. It's honestly hard to talk about Simmons because we have really no idea what he's going to do
Wiggins.
At the NBA level.
Wiggins.
Yeah. So
Wiggins could be in the top five.
And the one thing about these teams we mentioned, some of them have like so many young players, like that turns into young assets. And, you know, that allows you to make trades and get those superstar players that help you speed up the process.
For sure.
One team
saw that stat the other day that, you know, the college starting lineups and how young the Phoenix Suns starting lineup was. I think out of the four starting or the five starting lineups, you know, in college basketball that night were all older than the Phoenix Suns sported the youngest starting lineup in basketball, including all of the Sweet 16 basketball games that were being played last night.
Yeah, that's pretty wild if you think about it. And we mentioned like a guy like Devin Booker dropped 70 last year. He's only 20 years old, and it's not like none of these other guys have had good games. Ulis has had some nice stretches of playing basketball. Marquese Chris have showed some things, and Bender's been out, and Derek Jones Jr. obviously showed off the dunking ability. But there's some real potential, and they just need to get some – I'm not saying anything bad about Earl Watson, but I think they should definitely get some more assistance or more focus on player development in there and really, you know, get this team going. Because these young players together, you build them together for a few years. They're starting at such a young age. You have so much time to work on them with their game.
Yeah, no, it's for sure. And it's going to be tough to say. I think after the Timberwolves, because I think we both agree that the Timberwolves will be a playoff team next season.
Yeah, most likely. I mean, unless there's some type of injury or something. Yeah. This year they're pretty close and they just can't be consistent down the stretch.
But if that – but that eighth spot – oh, man. Utah's still kind of young too. They were – Utah has, I think, elevated themselves from – would have been – if we had this conversation last year, Utah would have been in it.
Yeah, and now they're we consider them more of a great team. And talking about Utah – I wanted to ask you, we posed another question on OTG Twitter. Who's the biggest threat to the Warriors in the Western Conference? Number one, we had the Spurs. I think they're winning at about 60%. Then number two was the Rockets at about 30%. And then the rest of the percentage was with other. So I ask you, who's the biggest threat to the Warriors in the Western Conference?
I've said it all year, it's the Rockets. But my dark horse is that I think the Clippers would give them – if the Clippers were able to beat Utah – it's always that one team that's Golden State's not say afraid of or hasn't matched up with well because they've beat them like 10 or 11 times in a row. But it was like it's a dark horse and it's a team that I don't think Golden State would kill in the second round. The biggest threat to me is still Houston because of the style of play, what I've seen from them in the playoffs against Golden State, not only last year, I don't really count, year before, and the way that team's rolling with D'Antoni and Harden. I still think it would be Houston, but I definitely –
You think does Houston's defense worry you?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. I just see it as a matchup thing and a pace thing. Utah is going to be a team that's going to try to slow Golden State down and play in the half court. And I'm not trying to overlook San Antonio. I don't think they can beat Golden State. I really don't.
But wouldn't that be like the total San Antonio thing where, you know, they kind of fly under the radar the whole year and then people really don't think they can beat the Warriors and then next thing you know, they beat him in a seven-game series.
Who's your biggest one?
That would definitely – I mean, this is a really tough question. Obviously, I knew we were going to do this today, so I did a little research yesterday about it. And, like, I personally have said in the past that I want to go with the Rockets, and I agree with you, the pace, the matchup, and the offensive firepower. But, like, I'm a little bit worried about the Rockets' defense. Just because, you know, they don't consistently play and how much can they turn it on? You know, who's going to, like, step up to an elite level defensively? Because, you know, if you're playing the Warriors for a seven-game series, you have to be focused full game, you know, full 60 minutes, no jokes, no nothing. So, I mean, 48 minutes. So, especially when you need players like chasing Clay around screens, chasing Curry around screens, is Harden going to do that for the whole game? You know, so that's worrisome for me. I'm a little worried about the Spurs in the sense that I don't know how they match up. Like, the matchups aren't really there because they tend to go with that bigger lineup with Aldridge and Gasol. And I think the Warriors would just abuse that because it's not like those two are super dominant. And then the Jazz haven't really had much success against the Warriors so far. but they do obviously have some young players. They can bring some energy and they can kind of enforce their role in the game. And they can play defense, but offensively, I don't think they'd be able to keep up. The Clippers, on the other hand, I like lost all hope for the Clippers, to be honest. Going into the season, I know we talked about it, I thought this might be their year if they stayed healthy, and they haven't really stayed healthy. They don't have that chemistry. J.J. Redick came out and said that he expects the team not to play defense. So things aren't great in L.A. I guess I would probably have to go with the Rockets, though. None of these teams, though, I like talked myself out of them all being a true threat to the Warriors. So it still seems like a likely Cavs-Warriors matchup in the finals.
It's, I don't know. I can't see, like you just mentioned, I can't see anybody beating them, but it's something about, I don't know. It's just weird. It's something about,
and that's assuming that Kevin Durant comes back and is healthy. Just let that be known.
I think that second round series is going to be difficult, whether it's Utah or whether it's the Clippers.
Well, the one advantage for maybe Houston and San Antonio might be that they have to face, you know, a Clippers or Utah team in that second round. And that could, I mean, most likely will be a physical matchup. Utah plays physical. They play great defense. And the Clippers obviously have some extra edge against the Warriors. So it might begin to a little physical.
A long shot, but it's possible that the Thunder take the Clippers spot, right? That the Thunder become the 5 seed, which would create the Rockets Clippers matchup in the first round, and it would give the Thunder the Jazz. If you're the Thunder, who would you rather play, Rockets or Jazz in the first round?
If I was the OKC, I'd probably want to play the Jazz, just because they'll kind of grind it out with you, and OKC has a better chance of winning a grind it out type game. No, they don't really have the offensive firepower to match up with Houston. And maybe you get lucky in the Jazz, kind of, you know, an experienced playoff team. Westbrook obviously has had his fair share of playoff moments. And I think they kind of match up with them and they wouldn't have to worry as much about, like, you know, if you're facing the Rockets or Warriors or, you know, even the Spurs, like, you're probably going to have to put up over 100 plus to win the game. And, like, when I look at OKC, it just, like, when, especially when playoff basketball turns on, you know this, the defense really turns up, the game slows down a lot. Are they going to be able to put up that many points with the team they have?
Probably not, no.
Maybe a few games, but a 7-game series is just tough. Like, when I watch OKC offensively sometimes and I just see the players they put on the floor, it's like, who's going to create if Westbrook isn't out there? So, I mean, I would love, but I mean, maybe we'll see Westbrook play like the entire game, maybe a couple entire games or something, because he obviously can do that. But,
well, my mind is thinking, what is the most logical way that the Warrior-Thunder playoff matchup can happen? And it's obviously not going to come in the first round. We know that. And now I'm starting to think, well, I know the 4-5 winner, the NBA is the only league that doesn't do any reseeding or mess with their bracket. It's true to form, meaning that the 4-5 winner will always play the 1-8 winner. And I'm just trying to think of how the Thunder and Warriors can match up in this postseason, because I think it's everything that we'd want to see.
Yeah, I mean, I want to see it from the sense, like, I want to see the extra drama, obviously. But, like, I also would like to see a good playoff series. And from what we've seen this season, it, like, a Warriors-OKC matchup would not even be that entertaining.
But imagine, to be honest, imagine if it becomes one.
Yeah. Yeah, no, if it did and somehow Westbrook, like, keeps the team in the game and they push it 7 games, maybe if Durant doesn't play, even though I know they blew out OKC without Durant, I think that if Durant didn't play in a series, OKC could probably make it interesting.
Yeah, just on emotion. I just feel like on emotion he can get a couple games there.
Especially in OKC. One of our writers actually just wrote about OKC's home court advantage, so check that out. But – it's tough in general. Like, the only way I really see the Warriors losing in this playoff, you know, obviously other than the finals, which I think they can lose to Cleveland, is if, you know, Durant comes back and he's not healthy and the team doesn't find its rhythm, because, like, it's really tough to beat them in 7. And then Curry and Klay already had their bad shooting stretch, so good luck hoping they go cold.
The health of Durant's going to be important, but I don't think, because it's Denver and or Portland, even if he doesn't play in that series, or if he just uses it, those games or a couple of those games is, you know, easing him back in, they won't have any trouble. It's not going to be an issue for them, I don't think. I heard Durant's getting back into basketball activity, and he'll be able to ease his way back in. I don't think there's any sense of urgency to get him back in the regular season. Maybe if it could touch up a couple of those games.
I think you want to get his legs under, you know, his legs under him a little bit and kind of get the chemistry. But like you said, a first round matchup with Portland or Denver, it's going to kind of allow you to do that in the first round. You know, the second round team might be able to push you a little bit harder, but in the first round, Portland, Denver, no offense to them, I don't think they'll probably even be able to win a game against Golden State.
I think Denver would win one in Denver.
One in Denver? I don't know. Yeah, Portland. Maybe. It's
actually Portland.
I don't think like – but I don't think any of them – either of them would scare the Warriors, so.
No. No, I don't think so either. But also what I wanted to mention was obviously we had a lot of drama last night in the Sweet 16.
Yes, we did.
And the one takeaway – it's unfortunate that this was my one takeaway that just mean I don't have to hear LaVar Ball speak for another couple of weeks. It got so – overwhelming now that Lonzo Ball is out and he got dominated by Fox from Kentucky, who was sensational, and Monk was great, and they showed off their lottery picks as Kentucky moves on to play UNC, and then the buzzer beater from Florida at the Garden over Wisconsin, Chris Chesio was his name, guy came off the bench, played 30 minutes, and then made the dramatic shot in overtime at the Garden. So a lot of drama last night in the Sweet 16. Now the Elite Eight is set. Gonzaga, Xavier tonight. And what's the other game tonight? It's Gonzaga, Xavier, and Oregon, Kansas. And then Sunday will be South Carolina, the seventh seed, the darlings, I guess, of the tournament so far, against Florida, and then the Kentucky-North Carolina matchup. But finally some intense drama that this tournament, I think, has lacked a little bit of. It's been a solid tournament, but finally a buzzer beater, finally an overtime game, and now we move forward to the Elite Eight. And I know we're talking draft stocks, and I listened to the show on OTG about
On the Clock.
On the great show, and credit to Mike, right?
Yep, Mike Guido. He's had his first show. I think he just dropped his second episode today, actually, while we're recording this right now. So. Yeah, definitely check that out. He's got a lot of good stuff on the NBA draft stuff. Obviously, that's something I do. I don't really thought all year. So right now, just read a ton of articles, get my ideas of the prospects, strength, weaknesses, and kind of what they'll be like as an NBA pro.
And he did it. I just listened about 15 minutes of that first episode, and I really liked the way he broke it down. And I know I'm trying to find that at the tournament challenge. And I know my bracket is way down there at 26th. What place are you in? And you're actually not doing that bad, Nick.
No, that's another Nick.
Oh.
There's another Nick in the thing as well. I think he was like around the top. But but talking about draft stock, I saw this interesting point about Lonzo Ball. And someone said LaVar like did all this stuff, all this nonsense. So like Lonzo lost last night and there wasn't even that much hate directed towards him. It like was so much hate and memes directed towards LaVar. So it kind of like took all the hate away from Lonzo and put it all on LaVar. And it doesn't really matter to LaVar. So like in the big picture, maybe like him being an idiot has helped him like the slightest bit. But so I thought that was an interesting take from somebody on Twitter.
Definitely funny, because after all the guarantees and all this, and he's this, my boy's this, my boy's that, people were talking about him, but now it goes away for a little while and you can focus on what the importance of the tournament is, and it's about the players, not their fathers. And
exactly. In the town, on the floor, in the on-court stuff, not the off-court stuff. And so
these games will be good. And like you said, get a good opportunity to look at some top lottery picks. I know Magic Johnson was in attendance. This is the funny thing about it. Magic Johnson was not at Shaq's statue reveal. He was in Memphis watching the UCLA-Kentucky game. But Phil Jackson, who has no ties to the Laker organization anymore, obviously we know what he does for the Knicks as president of basketball operations, was at the Shaq statue revealing instead of being in Memphis. So I thought that was kind of a funny twist and something Knicks fans would appreciate.
Yeah, shout out to Shaq real quick for getting that statue. But that's, yeah, if you're a Knicks fan, like, you can't like that. Magic Johnson, who obviously is a huge part of Laker Nation in LA, and he, obviously his position with the team being the president now.
Yeah.
And then Phil Jackson, on the other hand, who, I mean, like, obviously coached Shaq, but doesn't have ties to the Lakers anymore. So, and he's not out there scouting, and it's likely that the Knicks will also have one of these top 10 picks, top five picks. So, you can't appreciate that if you're a fan.
No, definitely not. It's definitely an ironic twist, to say the least.
But the Knicks have definitely had some interesting headlines. Recently, last night, actually, Joakim Noah was suspended 20 games from the NBA.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
For anti-drug policy. And then there also was rumors, like, this past week that there's some potential of Derrick Rose actually re-signing in New York. I don't know how much credit is to those rumors, but that would be the worst thing that I'd want to hear if I was a Knicks fan.
Mm. Wow. I didn't see
that. And they also mentioned they're full in for the triangle next season. That's what they'll be running. So
they're also fully in for the tank right now.
Yeah, they are. Well, I mean, that actually makes sense though. So
yeah, but that net pick, say the Nets, let's just pretend that the Nets get that one pick.
Which is most likely.
Which is gonna go to the Celtics.
Yep.
The Celtics are going to get much better. And then that second – so now the second pick right now in order, I think it would be Lakers, Suns. It would be Lakers, Suns, Kings, Knicks, and Magic, and Sixers are all have 27 wins right now. And yeah. The Knicks are in – it's a possibility that they can get another top five pick, and we all know what happened in 2015. And –
Or they also could even – you could argue maybe they could get lucky and get the number one pick.
Yeah.
You know, there's still a probability that could actually happen. You think the Knicks would grab with that number one pick if they were hypothetically able to get it?
Man. Honestly, there's still so much that could play out because there's so many prospects that still come into that number one role. I just know that a lot of people – obviously Lonzo Ball's in consideration for it, maybe not after last night. But
I think he's still in contention for it. Fultz is the other point guard.
Yeah, the kid from that's the kid that a lot of people spoke about. The point guard from
one interesting thing about him is his wingspan. I saw something. I think he has like a 6'10" wingspan. He's like 6'4", 6'5". So like, and he's athletic. So I definitely like him. And he doesn't have as much hype as Alonzo, but a lot. I've seen him at a ton of number ones on draft boards. I've also seen Lonzo at number one too. I've seen Tatum at number one as well.
Josh Jackson from Kansas.
Yeah, Josh Jackson. I know some people were scared of him because there were some off the court issues earlier in the year, but he's had a pretty good tournament as well. Like you said, one of these guys could go on the next two or three games and go on a tear and just push themselves to number one. And we said that De'Aaron Fox last night, he knew he was playing up against Lonzo Ball. He turned on the game. I think he had like 38 maybe or 39. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely going to be a fun draft class, and it's always nice when you see the NBA get, like, such a nice class of NBA talent. We've seen some pretty meh classes in, the last few years, so this would be nice to see.
Yeah, it's loaded, and most of that talent is still on display with Kansas, Kentucky. Now UCLA's out now, but a lot of that talent was on
display. I know North Carolina has some guys too, so it'd definitely be something to keep an eye on and watch, you know. I try to balance it out and watch a little bit of – I watch the NBA games and we catch the end of the tournament games or catch the second halves. But now I think you have to focus a little bit more and see those NBA prospects. But that wraps it up for today. So as always, thank you guys for listening. Make sure you hit that subscribe button and let us know what you think of the show.
All right, guys.
And I'll talk to you next week, Harris.
Take care. See you guys next week. Enjoy the games.